Dear Dhamma friends, this time we are going to use for a Dhamma discussion or question and answer session. Of course, according to the original plan, scheduled to be in singular medium. And today we will make a little alteration, whereby we will go for in English medium, but those who already written, I don't think have any objection to this decision to go in English. If there is any such a thing, I will try my best to give a single version also. So I invite the questions to be presented.
Dear Bhante, may I ask, please give a summary of last night Dhamma talk in English. What do you recommend for developing Preeti and Sukha?
Preeti and Sukha.
Preeti and Sukha, especially in regard to one meditation object with appreciation.
Yesterday we tried to see the basic subject of cause and effect relationship. According to the particular sutta known as Mahanidana Sutta, you find in the Digha Nikaya, in the Sutta Nipata, and there the Buddha give in detail. Of course, the Digha Nikaya Sutta means that it's a very long one. Different perspective, different viewpoints regarding the each and every individual link. And today we were specifically taking the relationship with the contact and the feelings, and how is the contact condition to the feeling, and the basic thing the Buddha wanted to inform was, as far as there's a contact, there will be a feeling. If there is no contact, there aren't no feeling. And as the contact increases, arises, feeling arises. When the contact ceases to exist, the feeling ceases to exist. And that is the way, if someone aiming at cessation of feeling and the contact, one has to behave in such a way to train them and take it under control and go to the least amount of lack of feeling as contacts, and then the feelings will be reduced. So I tried to explain in our day-to-day life, we try the opposite. We try to increase the amount of contacts per day by seeing, hearing, smelling, touching, and tasting, and proliferating feelings in the pressure under the pressure principle. So therefore, this radical teaching or cause and effect in terms, the Buddha presents, the particular person decides whether he or she wants to increase or decrease the feelings and the contacts and the feelings, and they are it is up to that particular individual. It is not belongs to an omnipotent God or another person, and therefore one has to understand the mechanism, and once understood, still he or she has to take a particular decision. Am I to increase or decrease, and what are the ways and means towards increasing and decreasing? Citing an example, I mentioned in our day-to-day life, we have eye, the carnal sensitive eye, and the visual objects outside, and the ear and the sounds, smell and the nose, the tongue and the taste, and the other luxuries and the contacts, and the tactile sensation in the body. So our consumer society, in the luxury, under the terms of luxury, we try to proliferate them incessantly. And even though you won't become disqualified to experience this or to cut off them, if you know the effective sensitive method, and whereby the Buddha, those who wish to do experimenting, or to say Nobel Quest. He recommend the particular conducive conditions, just like operation theater for a brain surgery. He says for this operation, the theater is the forest, or under a tree, or in a solitude place, and that is why we take time to come to these kind of places. And when even if you come here, as far as number of variables are concerned, they are very much in number, and our minds are so untrained, so therefore intentionally, consciously, you have to cut off the eye and the visual object. So I recommend you to close your eyes and go to a silent place and do not entertain sounds. And so that institute also under control, and don't entertain smells and the tastes, and keep the body in such a way you can keep it for a long time without any intention. That means you are almost cutting down all the intentional activities of the body, and then focus the attention to your very sitting posture as to see whether you are comfortably sitting here and now. Whenever the mind come to the present moment, or in the sense we can say mindfulness or vigilance or awareness, we can define here, now, I am. Whenever we mind come to that mindset, here, now, I am, that is the definition for mindfulness and the awareness. And whenever that happens, the mind, for the first time, maybe in our history, for that particular person, become introvert. Otherwise, mind is naturally extrovert. So, therefore, now, when it come to the introvert, that itself is a very big change. And once that comes, the particular person can't experience it if it is happening for such a split second. So, you have to keep the mind under the here now I am situation for number of thought moments, and then only one can understand the difference when the mind is outwardly and when mind come inwardly. And then you have to ask yourself whether the mind, my own mind, appreciate this here now I am, or it's always outwardly going to see, hear, smell, touch, and change the body posture. That means your mind is not ready to entertain or appreciate that the very preliminary form of the mindfulness and the awareness. And if it is so, you have to give the conducive conditions to keep the mind in this track, here now I am. And when you are, whenever you are appreciating and experiencing this here now I am, that's a kind of a physical solitude. And they are, if I am to question or challenge you, threat you, or put you into exercise, or to ask what you experience when there is no listening, not hearing, not seeing, not smelling, not touching, not tasting, but when the mind comes here and now, what is the experience? And definitely you will become spellbound and you can't talk. You can't give the definition because mind has never gone into that understanding of here now I am, or to understand who am I. So that indicates something happening. So you have to develop in such a way to keep the mind in that state as long as possible to see what is happening unintentionally. Because intention of all the actions you have cut off as a discipline and calming down, and you are fully vigilant, fully intelligent, fully aware, and observe what is happening. And there's a hint from the Buddha. He says the most intrinsic bare minimum for a living body is the breath. That is also not the forced breathing, it is just natural breathing. So there's enough chances for you to come and meet with the natural breathing. If that is so, the natural breathing will replace here now I am concept. And then you have to touch it. You have to feel it. You have to feel it in such a detailed way. Whenever the breathing happens, the mind must be so inquisitive and it must indicate this is not the sound, this is not the thought, this is not the feeling, this is the breath. And that is the way you isolate the breath. And when that isolation happens, naturally you may come to feel three facets of the breath. That means it is not sound, taste, or feeling, but the breath. That means your mind is face to face with the breath. That is the one facet. The second thing is, where is the point in your body where the breath touches and give the most prominent feeling? Some people feel at the lowermost part of the respiratory tract, that is the diaphragm, that is what we call rising and falling of the belly, or sometimes the uppermost point, where the tip of the nose, or in between these two, wherever may be the place, you may understand what is the most prominent point, vantage point. And that's the second facet of the breath. The third one is little subtler. The when the out-breath touches that particular point, what is the kind of feeling, what is the kind of experience you get it? Contrast to when the in-breath is happening. Or in general terms, what is the experiential difference between the in-breath and out-breath? Whenever someone is sharp enough to see my mind is face to face the breath and it is touching that particular point, and these are the difference between in-breath and out-breath, that's the maximum specialization you can do for contacts, so that you are fully with the breath. So such a person easily can understand whenever that mind is observing the breath chronologically, more and more you to be with the breath, what happens according to the time. Your mind becomes more brilliant and close to the breath, or it is increasing or decreasing. The discrimination between the in-breath and out-breath becoming prominent, or it becomes subtler, or your touching point is always, it is in one point, or it is changing, or if the mind is all on and off, run to the sounds and the pain and still come back to the breath. All the kind of characters, they are all valid experience indicating your mindfulness is increasing. But when you are practicing, keep on. It's a universal law. If you keep the track with one particular object, slowly, 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 the object becomes very subtle. Your touch on that object is bound to become subtle. And if you keep the track with it, it becomes the subtlest. And the way from gross to the subtle to the subtlety, the subtlest point is not only changing the external object of that in-breath and out-breath, your mindset also correspondingly changing, so that ultimately whenever the mind comes to that subtlest form of the in-breath and out-breath, your faculty mind consciousness will become somewhat collected and be face-to-face with and very close with the breath. Ultimately, you almost complain telling there is no breath. You can't feel it. That is the way you can give. You can do away with contacts. Gross feeling gives rise to very subtle, and that is the way the contact changes chronologically. As contact reduces, your feeling on the breath also automatically reduces. Ultimately, you complain, you can't feel the breath. And this indicates contacts, as for the contacts as they are feeling are there. There is no contact, no feeling. When the contact arises, feeling arises, contact gross, feelings are gross. So this is the point one can verify within very short period of time. When you go to a forest, close your eyes and keep the concentration on one particular object, the contacts are reducing, disappearing, and keep the track with that. And then you can understand fully living body, fully aware, fully vigilant, but no feelings. So when that happens, The Buddha said, this is the only living moment in your whole life. All the other types, you are outwardly, your feelings are partial, they are never complete, ending up with the frustration and the mental tension, all the mental diseases. But when you, the mind is calm and collected, even though there is no object, even though there is no feeling, your mind is both calm and collected, and you are fully living. That is called a chitta viveka, not the bodily viveka, not the carnal or bodily kind. This is a chitta viveka, and that possible only for human beings. So it's a very good junction in the meditation as well as understanding this cause and effect relationship. So therefore, more and more you go to the depth of the object, that means you are associating in face to face, from gross to the subtle to the subtlest, and it is not something that you do. This is something happened to you. When the object becomes subtle, mind also becomes subtle. But I took enough time to explain when this is happening. Your rational mind is the main culprit disturbing you, because it creates uncertainty, it creates boredom, it creates monotonous, it creates sleepiness, it creates insecurity, and therefore you never allow this process to happen in the natural way. The rational mind, deductive knowledge, come and asking for interpretation, asking for explanation, asking, giving troubles, because it is loses its grounds. So therefore one has to have very good understanding of what is happening. One has to know where to focus. One has to go prepared together with other all the spiritual qualities. I think this is a kind of a summary I can do impromptu. Of course, it is not word-to-word translation.
Dear Bhante, sometimes during meditation, the mind likes to sit, but the body down, and sometimes it is opposite way. Can Bhante let me know how to improve my problem? Thank you.
It's a good question, but before going into the detail, I need some examples, then only I can handle it. Otherwise, they are just words for me. So please give me an example where the mind desire to the meditation, but the body is disturbed and it is not happy. If someone can come out with the question, he can come out with the example, then it will be very touchy rather than abstract. So, so then how can you say at that time mind needs meditation? Because if the pain comes, but if the mind needs, mind has a lot of other ways to tackle rather than complaining the pain, because that your main object may not be the pain. Your main object may be the breath. So at that time, of course, pain is a gate crasher. It is an unwanted visitor. It come and disturb you. And meanwhile, if you observe the breath, something radical I am suggesting, if you can see, sometimes you may see the pain is there. The breath is very calm and quiet still. And that is therefore, if the mind wish, calm and quiet, why can't mind go and be with the breath rather than complaining about the pain? That means mind also the supporting and finding excuses. That is why it is talking about the pain. Otherwise, it can go to the breath, it can go to the solitude, it can go to the calmness. Of course, one has to prove first. And then you can see even the body is suffering, if the mind really wish, if you really give a helping hand to the mind, it has a lot of other objects. At a time, it can see, it can hear, it can smell, it can taste, it can feel. If the feeling is so disturbing, why the mind is always try to be with the feeling? It has within the feeling also, you can have the feeling of the in-breath and out-breath. You can feel this under the excruciating kind of pain, but still the mind has the option. So if the mind really wish, mind is really wishing, I am suggesting, just go and see whether the breath is disturbed or not. So there are, you can ask mind to, the body to, let excretion the pain, but the mind has another options. So it is a radical kind of a answering, but as a meditator you can try. And on the other hand, if the body wish to meditate, if the mind is distracted, what kind of experience you can come out with? On what experience you are making this question, allegation? So that means they are my criticism is their mind and the body both are not happy. But I am asking example, the body is happy to sit, mind is not. The agitated mind, but the body is no pain. So, yeah. So if your aim is for mindfulness, there's no complaint. Mindfully, you know, body is disturbed. Mind is disturbed, body is undisturbed. So it's a good object for you to keep on practicing. I am accusing you, you are only worrying about the concentration. People, those who are searching for concentration, this is a very big complaint. But those people are meditating for mindfulness, it's a very good object. I don't know, I'm making the point clear. Body is very calm and quiet, but the mind is agitated. So you know it. As far as you know it, you are the winner. You can't say concentration. I am asking you to give the mindfulness first and foremost, not the concentration. But the mindfulness is, once mindfulness taken the upper hand, definitely I will assure you, concentration will follow the suit. So many yogis, from my viewpoint, they don't give the correct perspective for the mindfulness. If your aim is to develop mindfulness, anything happening here, valid. Nothing to get rid of. This is the first time, because you give up all the kind of thing, come and see. And that is the first time you can see, body is very calm and quiet, mind is agitated. But if you are living a very busy life, you don't know these kind of things. So this is a kind of a good result. Good outcome out of your sacrification, and therefore don't take it as a block, don't take it as a distraction, don't take it as a sin, don't take it as a defilement. So you have to observe it. The very disturbing mind is telling that mind is disturbed, body is not disturbed. So that means in this disturbing mind there's a kind of a mindfulness. Fraction of mindfulness. Appreciate only that fraction, not the disturbing fraction. If you appreciate the disturbing fraction, your mindfulness will be washed off. This will be eroded. So they have to understand the disturbance is so big, even then, even if it is powerful, it can't do away with mindfulness. Clear? Is the point clear? So if I am to give more, little bit, taking the mean advantage of this time, sometimes you feel so hateful. Sometimes you are full of desire. But if you know that present set of mind, I am full of desire, I am full of hate, that means the hatred is not 100%. There's a little chance of mindfulness to work. That is why you know your mind is hateful. So out of these two, just appreciate the mindfulness which alarm you, telling your mindset is now hateful. So that must be the way of appreciation of the little bit of mindfulness which is fighting with full hateful atmosphere. But instead, if you are forgetting about the mindfulness, you are going to worry about that mind is full of hate and kind of thing. I think that is not a good way to appreciate that little bit of mindfulness. So therefore, under any circumstances, There's a reason to be glad if you know how to analyze the situation. Our mind is always finding impossibilities, difficulties, complaints, conditions. It's a defeated mind. Don't give any chance. Always see there's a reason to be glad. And if you appreciate that reason to be glad, you will be a glad person. Otherwise, you will be a complaining person. So the Buddha, when he's explaining the Karaniyamitta Sutta, Karaniyam atta kusulene antan santam padang abhisamitya, he says the person who wish to have own benefits or self-compassion must have 14 qualities. The very first one is sakko. Sakko means positive thinking. You must have a positive thinking, otherwise you will be always defeated by this bad defilement. The positive part of your agitated mind is that mind knows the body is calm, mind is agitated. That very understanding happened because of your own observation. It is not someone told you, it is not someone that you prepared, but it is there. So very understanding is something appreciable. So therefore, when there is a disturbed mind, but yet understood, that is disturbing, under such circumstances only you can understand the agitation as the hindrance. Out of 5 hindrances, sometimes mind gets agitated. The agitation you can't learn with others' agitation. You can't learn with the past agitation. You can't learn with the future agitation. When agitation is there, agitated mind, you have to let the agitation run and still look at it as if someone else at a distance. And I think this is therefore a very good opportunity, very good situation to understand mind. But if you are going to recognize, if you are going to assume, if you are going to react with agitation, it's a wrong way. So the Buddha says, don't claim this agitation as me. Don't claim this agitation as mine. Don't claim this agitation as myself. But just see it as the subject matter. Something you have to object. See an object and observe it. And then you are not only understanding your agitation, you understand the human agitation. Everyone's mind is the same. So therefore it is it's a good fertile grounds for you to inquire into, rather than telling that I am a poor guy, my mind is always agitated and it is maybe due to my past karma or maybe due to my lack of precepts, so kind of thing. You are promoting and giving fertilizer for agitation. But instead, you understand, amidst of all kind of agitation, my mind has the mindfulness to understand I am agitated. That very little thing you must appreciate. So you had to raise the question in English, please.
In relation to the description that was raised in the second part of the question, as the particular thinking and superlinear practice, I was asking when you give up mindfulness, the concentration will follow suit, and then will be superlinear follow that. I don't know that.
No, of course that whenever the mind is, once you get rid of this tension and the frustration, mind is always happy. Our mind is always finding reason to be frustrated, reason to be tensed. And we consider this as a human right. From morning to evening, we find reason to be frustrated, tensed. And complaining with others and telling, I am having so much frustration, I am blah, blah, blah. But get rid of them. That is not our way. We must find a reason to be glad under such circumstances and then you see the positive mind. So therefore, there is no ways and means to develop the PT, but you must, whenever the mind is mindful, understood this frustration and the tension, and reaction, assumptions, these are the dark clouds. Whenever they are not there, mind is happy. And that is why the young children, the world is happy. Whatever it happens. Because they don't know. They have not. They are yet to understand frustration. They are yet to understand tension. So therefore, whenever a young child is there, by looking at them, the young people, young child, parents lose, the parents get rid of their tension. Well, this is such a source of happiness. So when we become elderly, when we are about to get more social status and money and kind of thing, our frustration, our tension is mounting like anything. Ultimately at the deathbed, at utter loss. So you have to ask ways and means to find happiness and rapture. And when you become, when you go to the child psychology, you're full of happiness, full of rapture. So that is what called we have so conditioned, corrupted our mind with time, and it happened whether you are successful or not. So therefore, some Westerners say the way of mindfulness is to go back your mind to the child psychology. You can just be happy. I am not going to make a point that there is no such a P.T. Sukha as a chanic factor. They are there. But it's a mere absence of frustration. It's a mere absence of tension. It's a mere absence of reaction. Mere absence of assumptions. Assuming. Then the lightness happens. Then the mind comes to its natural. That means mind is at home. Mind is back to its nature. So it is our starting point. So we are so off the road. We have to learn. I mean de-learning, not the learning. De-learning how the conditioning, how the reactions, how this assuming, how this frustration overwhelming our human nature, human mind. So whenever there is given any mental setup, if you can find out on the spot where the mind is frustrated, where the mind is tensed, where the mind is reaction, how do you assume this is that and kind of thing and pick them out. And even the Buddha is so sharp and straight, he says, even without picking them and getting rid of, by mere seeing frustration as frustration, by mere seeing your reaction as reaction, by mere seeing your assuming nature, you become happy. It is called glad game. That's what it's called, the glad game. And I recommend you to read Pollyanna. Have anyone read the Pollyanna, the novel? It's a very famous one in America. In 1919, it got the bestseller. And each year, they show this film. And that a young girl, it's a very unfortunate, miserable girl, but father is teaching her at a very younger age, Pollyanna, that her name is Pollyanna, you must try to find a reason to be glad under any circumstances. Then you are the winner. So see, any given situation, not a single event in our life with the good and the bad. Our mind is always finding experts to see bad. So therefore you are bad. The moment you try to see the good side, the silver line in the dark cloud, life is full of piti and sukha. It is not something you bring from the supermarket. Only thing is you have to get rid of this tension, get rid of this the frustration or reaction and protesting, claiming, assuming. These are the culprits. I'm not attacking you, I am telling generally.
One thing, when I was sitting in meditation, my leg muscles are vibrating, slight movement. Then I couldn't concentrate, I could keep on concentration. When I was in a standing posture, I can do my anapanasati. So he's asking, can I do Anapanasati in a standing posture?
Of course, it's an alternative. For the beginners, it is recommended highly on the sitting posture. Sitting posture because you have no any effort to maintain the posture. The best is this lying down posture, but it is more inclined to sleeping. So therefore, sloth and torpor, therefore it is not been recommended sitting. So if there is a sleepiness, sometimes it is recommended to meditate on standing posture. But this complaint or this explained situation is not a big issue. Because that situation has to be little bit clarified, so I need some cross-questioning. So when someone is, I hope, according to the question arises, the person who is writing is doing Anapanasati Bhavana, or mindfulness on the in-breath and out-breath, and while it is happening, does this pain start right from the beginning of the sitting, or you go into the pain while observing Anapanasati, and when the Anapanasati is becoming subtler and subtler, the pain, on this sense of pain, it's still talking about kind of a vibration or dancing of the muscles. If that is happening while the breath is dwindling off, it's a very good sign of good meditation. But if it is happening right from the beginning and it becomes a nuisance, there is something wrong with the body muscles. So that I have to be clarified. So my question is, after sitting, after how many minutes do you experience this muscle dance? So, yeah.
In my afternoon session,
it is unbearable. Yes, I will go over the concentration later. I am bringing your attention to the mindfulness. So when this is thing happening, does it unbearable, excruciating, or still you can see both Anapana and this one? That is why your question is raised upon the concentration. I am kindly asking you to come parallel with me, put the weight onto the mindfulness, and while you are doing, you can sit and please. While the mindfulness on the breath is happening, after a while, together with mindfulness, you can hear sounds, bodily pains are there, or dancing are there, thoughts are there, and therefore you have to do struggling, you have to do wrestling in order to keep the track with the mindfulness. So this is a very good chance for you to understand now the mindfulness is not only on one object at a time, the changing or vibration of the muscles, leg is prominent at a time, breath is, mindfulness on the breath is prominent. So they are sometimes come into the, in par with fighting, putting the attention into the two different sides. And sometimes the pain is more, mindfulness on the breath is less. Sometimes mindfulness on the breath is more, the pain is less intensive. Under such circumstances, if you keep on practice, you will one day understand, sometimes breath is more attractive and the muscle vibrations are not much attractive. Or mind is not distracted for that. Sometimes you see mind is more distracted to the pain, for this vibration, and breath is neglected. So that is why the Buddha says, the mindfulness have 11 facets. So unless otherwise one is mastering all the 11, he can't claim he knows Anapanasati, he knows mindfulness. So therefore, under these circumstances, you can see sometimes mindfulness is more, less distracted, and you can see, and the muscle dance or the vibration is far away. Sometimes the muscles are very distracted, breath is far away. That means through this vibration, still you can see the breath. Sometimes you can see both. Sometimes you can see breath is more prominent and mind the muscles vibrations are less distracted. So in terms of closeness and distance, in terms of desirability and undesirability, in terms of near and far, these two has to wrestle. Then only you are learning all the facets of my breath. Otherwise, you will never develop the unseen facets of the breath, because you always expect the breath to be very desirable, breath to be very close, breath to be very near, breath to be very gross, breath to be very under your nose. Yes, these spices are good, but instead, Buddha says yet another six facets. Sometimes breath is disappearing, still you can see. Sometimes breath is appearing, still you can see. But sometimes you can see breath is not much desirable, still you can be mindful. Sometimes you get breath is far away, still you can mindful. Sometimes you feel breath is out of your body, still you can be mindful. So likewise, all the facets are valid facets. Our rational mind only allow open the doors for five, close the doors for six. So therefore, your experience is always less than 50%. If you wish to get the whole picture, all the way, when the breath is wrestling with yet another one, you get a golden opportunity to see the all the colors, all the facets, all the performances of the breath. So therefore, don't go for alternatives. I'm not saying that it is a crime to go to alternatives. You can keep it as a separate option. But see how when the both of them are fighting each other, I mean the vibrations and the breath, impartially, even with even suspended attention, with choiceless awareness, just see. Rather than try to escape it and go to standing posture, so this will be very radical. It will be very novelty to see, and ultimately you will develop a kind of a mindset. The pain is excruciating. And still you can see the breath. So such a person only, the Buddha says, at the deathbed, he can monitor the last out-breath. The death pain is there, everything is disappointing, but still, amidst of all the disappointments and everything, still he can monitor two more breaths time, I am going to die. One more breath time, I am going to die. This is the last breath, I am dying. So that is what the Buddha teach to Srahula, the young Samanera. While you are living, if you see all the 11 facets, even the Charimaka Passasapi, Janatova Nirujjanti, the last out-breath also disappearing, ceasing to exist under your light of mindfulness. And in my personal experience, when I faced the Viva exam, in my postgraduate last comprehensive exam, I went there without much preparation because I was doing a job. I had no much of a formulas, all the kind of thing, and I am hating the formulas and the graphs. But anyway, I had to go, and unknown people came and bought this setup. I don't know the detail of the facts. What I did was, I sit there, let the mind to take three breaths, very consciously, very mindfully, and then when I'm opening, I feel like at home. No much of tension, of course, people are waiting to ask questions. And one person raised a question. I was giving the answer, but I know very in generic terms, not up to the theoretical this thing. And another member of the board came a little late. He put a cross question. Then, of course, I got disturbed. Then I asked the board which question I must answer, the first one or the second one. I thought second question is disturbing me. Because I was answering it and the second person came and this thing, I am sorry, I can't keep the track of my mind. So you have to select which one I have to answer. So board was got a little upset. He told, no, no, you can go with the first question. So I was betting, and after that, then I can take the second question. I started, I developed the confidence. And then onward, it was cracking jokes, and interview went on very smoothly. And the person who came later, immediately came out of the water and had the shake hand. He told, you are the only person I saw in such an exam, very relaxed. Definitely I had no much of trumps. I was not much skillful in the factual matters. But I did was, I let the breath to happen. While they are talking, I kept my attention as much as on the mindfulness on the breath. And that is answer. That is the answer. So even if I have a very serious situation, death of your mother, death of your asset and kind of thing, of course the mind is fully clouded and tense and kind of thing. If you learn with that all the clouded and tense mind, if you can go and touch the breath, maybe in the day-to-day activities, the moment you touch the breath, you feel at home. And you see everything can come and go, but still, no one can stop me to be mindfulness on the breath, amidst of all the troubles. The moment you go to the mindfulness of the breath, you feel at home. So therefore, this is a very little practical situation for you to not to give up the breath, not to give up the posture, but wrestle them. Let them wrestle and don't take any part or partial. Observe it. And ultimately you will understand under such little difficulties only also, mindfulness can be there but no concentration. But that is, there is a kind of a concentration, it is called momentary concentration, and that is what helps in vipassana, in insight meditation, and that is very pragmatic kind of concentration, and not on one particular fixed object. It concentrates while the objects are changing. For example, when you are walking, when the left leg is taking the weight and right leg is releasing the pressure, weight, on what you have to concentrate, on what you have to be mindful, it is a transient. And then right to the left to the right, while you are balancing on the right leg, you can feel the pressure, the heat, cold, stiffness and tension. But if the transferring, right to the left to the right, there should have two. Otherwise, the mindfulness never get become sharp. So therefore, they are kind of techniques the Buddha has presented. Our mind is happy to be with concentration, so-called samatha samadhi. But samatha samadhi is, it is like anesthetizing. It is not inviting your capacity, but it's a closing. But as a yet another kind of a concentration, while the objects are changing and fighting, still you can impartial, get a distance, see this panorama, and you know if it is impossible, you can stand and do your mindfulness, but don't give up quickly. Get as much as possible this dramatic experience, and it is very, very helpful to maintain the mindfulness in day-to-day activities, or in modern terms we call it multitasking. How to keep the mindfulness, we have to keep the attention. This is a very good situation there.
Another part of this question. When one is practicing anapana, that person feels sleepiness, is it okay to practice buddha anusati or asubha?
I would like to relate to this same second part of the question to the first part. When the breath is becoming somewhat subtler, the pain becomes more prominent. Sometimes sounds become more irritating and the distracting thoughts become proliferating. There is also one opportunity. The other part is, whenever the object becomes subtler and subtler, mind can escape into sleepiness. And agitation with the pain is too much of energy. Slipping into the sleepiness, lack of energy. So therefore, as far as the energy aspect is concerned, when the object becomes subtler and subtler, it plays tricks. Sometimes becomes very agitated and disperse mind. Lot of thoughts and lot of pains and distraction. And when the tickling sound on the clock also become a problem. And because that your sensitivity is increasing, sometimes it escape, it run away to slumber to sloth and talk, to the sleepiness. So therefore, good. Second, the alternative is to brush up your mind and energize your mind with the Buddha Anusati and Asubha is good. But understand the situation and don't be rushing to jump into the alternative. See, is this something, this kind of a mental situation is because the objects become subtler and mind is not happy to tackle it. And therefore it is escaping. If that is the case, you have to note the same object in breath and out breath and little in a vigorous way. I will assure you, concentration will be distracted. Concentration will be disturbed, but mindfulness you can keep track with. But towards your answer, there's a one particular sutta known as Bhikkhuni Passe Sutta. Bhikkhuni Passe Sutta. One day Venerable Ananda goes to the Bhikkhuni monastery, nunnery, and go there, ask, dear sisters, how are you, and do you get enough requisites, and do you have enough time for meditation, and what are the kind of meditation? And then all were happy about Venerable Ananda's visit, and they say that we have Bhante, all the kind of things, we do Satipatthana, and it is also catching. And then appreciate and go and back, report to the Buddha, Bhante in my free time I visited and I asked their health and other facilities, and I questioned them on Satipatthana, they are doing Satipatthana well. Then the Buddha asked about, did you teach him Anidhaya Bhavana, Apanidhaya Bhavana, two terms. Then Venerable Ananda says, no. And I don't know what you are talking about. I don't know Panidhaya Bhavana. I don't know Apanidhaya Bhavana. But then the Buddha says, Ananda, when you are practicing Satipatthana, at a time mind becomes bewildered, no objects. And therefore it either fall into sleep or going to entertain thoughts. Distracted. Under such circumstances, it is like a beehive is dispersed. The bees are disturbed. Under such circumstances, your object is no more, so therefore mind is scattering. So there you have to introduce Buddha Anusati. There you have to introduce Metta Bhavana in the Samatha method, and then again agglomerate the mind, and then again go to the Vipassana. So in Satipatthana way, on the way to Satipatthana, there are such undecided situation that is called Apanidhaya Bhavana. Mind has no particular object, fall into sleep or get disturbed. Under such circumstances, you have to introduce Buddha Anusati and Mitta or Asubha, whatever may be. Whenever the main object is clear and it is unified, then you have to do Panidhaya Bhavana. You know where to focus and mind is alert. So therefore, these techniques like Buddha Anusati and others must be in your tool bag. But you must know where to use it. An appropriate technology, putting the proper technique, is you have to learn only by trial and error. So therefore, it is not a mistake of you on the path or way to Satipatthana. These kind of things are there. So only they come out, unless otherwise that particular sutta like Bhikkhuni Passe, only they come out only in the interviews, only happening in the discussions. So therefore the practicing people often have to have discussions there, whereby this difficult situation come out and answers also can find. So therefore there's no particular black and white answer. You have to see the situation according to the circumstances appropriately. You have to select the method, and if it is wrong, don't hesitate, go for another alternative. There are a lot of ways and means.
Here is the question. Please explain what is Sovan Mark, Sovan Follow. And the next one, is there any indication, if you are coming close to that jnana, is there any indication or anything you can find?
Though it is a theoretical question, I can answer in a practical way. When you become thirsty and you have get a glass of water, you drink, as far as you are drinking, you are in the Magga Jnana. Once you feel enough, that's the Pala Jnana, that's all. And you, do you feel that is enough? Or the glass or water or specialist has to tell and come and tell you that is enough? No. You know when it is gradually filling, that is enough. You finish it. As simple as that. When you are eating, taking a plate, when you are eating, and once you appease your appetite, you stop it. And while eating, it is called Magga Jnana. Once finished, it is a Pala Jnana. Something, it has been a separate issue in the Soan, related to the Soan. They say it's another issue for the Sakadagami. They are imaginary. They are living in dreams. They put into the day-to-day activity, it's simple. When you feel thirsty, drink. And once you finish, who tells you to stop? Once you quenched, you're thirsty, you know. And coming closer, and there's a hint. It's simply as that. When there's a wound, when you apply medicine, till you get develop the normal skin, you have to apply. And once the skin develops, you stop treating. That's it. There's no special in the these particular things.
Explain what is Shana Sampatti mean?
Opportunity. In English it is called opportunity. So you have to earn the opportunity. So therefore, whenever a person who do not know how to earn the opportunity, he missed the bus. So ever he missed the bus, opportunity is coming, but you have to earn it. So that is, you have to be very practical, very pragmatic, and theoretically, you are utter failure. So opportunity is always there. In Burmese example, it says, while the rain happens, if you keep the vessel outside, you can get water. But if you keep the vessel inside, you won't get it. And if you keep a vessel with a big mouth, that little body, but the amount of water you get is little. Fast, you can fill the vessel. But if it's a big vessel with a little mouth, the amount of water you get is less. And you keep a vessel with the hole in the bottom, soon after rain finishes, leaks off. So these are the way how to earn the opportunity. The Dhamma rain is always raining. But if your vessel is inside and protected, you will never get the Dhamma taste. You will never get the sap of Dhamma. So it has, you have to be prepared to get it and then how to protect it. So therefore, Shana Sampatti, whenever the Buddha Sasana is there, according to the Buddha, that's called opportunity is there, but we are not keeping the vessel outside. Or otherwise, says that you are keeping in a room, closing all the doors and windows, you say it's dark. But the outside, the full sun. If you keep the door open, if you keep the window open, you can see. And if you keep the doors closed, that you are losing the opportunity. So in, even in economics, you are having the upayogitave in Sinhala and opportunity cost. When you go to the supermarket, you are limited amount of funds and two products are fighting. Whether to buy that one or this one. Whatever you buy, you can't fulfill your satisfaction because you need both, but you have little money. So if you buy this one, you have the cost. You have to forego this one. If you buy this one, you have to forego that one. So efficiency is happen through trial and error. It is called purchasing efficiency. Likewise, the Dhamma is always there. But if you are not prepared, you are missing the bus. So that is what happened to us throughout the sansara. We were thinking about the sense pleasure. We are, in West it is called sexual pleasure. The Buddha put it in the sensual pleasure. Very decent word. And we are always behind the pleasure principle. So we will never hit the middle path. Always seeking the pleasure. So therefore, whenever you hit the middle path, that is called Kshana Sampatti.
Please explain meaning of avyakruta kamma. If a lay person wants to do avyakruta kamma, please give example.
avyavrta kamma and the doing is two different things. Looking and seeing, both you can do by the eye. Listening and hearing, both you can do by the ear. So I would like to ask a question from the audience. What's the difference between looking and seeing? So as far as the eye is concerned, looking is vyakata, seeing is abhyakata. Unintentionally, seeing happens. So as far as the ear is concerned, listening is intentional work. Unintentionally something hearing, abhyakata. So therefore, separating these two, vyakata, abhyakata, or intentional doing, and doing and happening, or in language is called passive voice and active voice, it is so difficult because we are unmindful. Whenever the mindfulness happens, first and foremost you will understand whether you are forced breathing or breathing normally takes place. Buddha's instruction is to focus the attention to the natural breathing. We are so, how do you call, in a grip. Whenever you try to do anapanasati, we can't wait till the natural breathing happens. We go for forced breathing, you end up with headache, end up with tension, end up with frustration. So therefore, whenever things happening, it is very aesthetic, very beautiful. Whatever you do is filthy, ugly, tension, frustration, reaction, and ultimately you get the repercussion. So whole meditation is from doing to happening. The mindfulness on doing to happening. And active to passive. So some people, and therefore many things, it is a kind of a, you can put the question, from doing to do something and to get the results, you have the motivation. So how can we promote happening, and what is the kind of motivation one can entertain to let the thing happen? So therefore it's a big psychological, philosophical question. More you become advanced in the meditation, your motivation reduces. Things are going to happen in natural order, and you be a neutral observer. You will be a distance observer, non-reactional way. And many people come and complain, you lost your senses, you lost your feelings. And therefore, they outcast you. In the society never be happy with this kind of people, those who are letting go, things happen and observing. They always type of a people, forking fingers into the things, and that is how this corruption happened. That is how this environmental distraction happened, corruption happened, and the mind distraction happened. So Taoism or Tathata or Avyakata means you understand only the human being can have the capacity to let it happen and observe. Sometimes in English we call monitoring. So to monitor something, you must have full of the equanimity and equipoise mind, otherwise you emotionally get involved. Therefore in the medical operations and the surgery, this is, you are not a professional surgeon unless otherwise you are clinically detached with the patient. You have to get detached from the patient, then only you can do. If you are going to understand the pain of the patient, you emotionally get involved, you will never be a professional surgeon. So therefore surgeons usually don't take their close relatives for operation, they give to someone. Because they have to get distance. So whole our art in meditation is to get a distance from our pain, from our breath, from our emotions, from our physical action, and then observe as if a third person, outsider, that is called Abhyakata. And when you learn Abhyakata, that means automatically happenings, and the happening is the term, you understand doing and happening. Whenever you do not know how much you did and how much it happened, your decision, your final judgment is always imbalance, never lasting, not enduring. The person who can completely observe and see this much I did intention and this much I know, the other person did up this much with the intention and this much is no, he is the only person can go to a final verdict, lasting decision. So Buddha says, don't think about the others, external thing, it is politics, mind your own business. Observe while you are breathing, how many breaths you do force breathing, how many breaths you observe naturally. So therefore, the second part of the question is grammatically wrong. Second part is how a lay person can do Abhyakata. You can't do Abhyakata. You can let it happen. So therefore, Abhyakata is something happening, but you become a full-fledged observer, very diligent observer. I doubt by practicing you can do it. Is called de-learning process, deconditioning process, and so therefore, can you de-learn? Can you decondition with an intention? It's an art. So therefore, understanding Abhyakata is not a science. Method, there is no method. It's a science, it's an art. So therefore, when we are doing intentionally, left side of the brain is the one taking the upper hand. That is the one corrupted in ourselves. But never it go to the right side. Right, so it's a very aesthetic. It's happy to happen anything. Take everything in the whole. So whenever the shifting happens from the left to the right, you say, okay, it's a happy boy. Any moment is full, contented. Why should I manipulate? But the rational mind comes and says, don't let it happen now. It is presently okay, but tomorrow it will not be. Therefore, start writing, manipulating and kind of thing. Mess up everything. So therefore, those who know the Abhyakata, they let things to happen according to the cause and effect relationship, according to the laws of the nature, according to the laws of the mind. They never manipulate. Even the manipulation happens, they know I have to get the punishment. I have to get the consequences. So even the consequence happens, they are ready to have, they have the capacity to forbear it, but they know they have committed. Abhyakata means uncommitted. Abhyakata is committed. Yeah, the chetana bhikkave kammam vadami. Abhyakata means no chetana. Abhyakata means chetana. Whenever you do abhyakata, chetana is there, kamma is there. Anything happen to you, no kamma. So therefore, it's such a release. If you can keep an account, keep in the bookkeeping, this much I did, this much happened to me. So we are not keeping the bookkeeping. So therefore, we have to ask another person, we have to borrow other knowledge to see whether I did or it has happened to me. So it's a basic, primary job of the mindfulness is to get out of yourself and observe yourself while walking. Am I regimenting left, right, or let the body to walk and observe? So if the left, right is going to lead you in meditation, all the army personnel should have already enlightened by them. But they are doing so much of left and right. No. It is not leading, it is regimenting. And it is political. It's a power game. But whenever you do out of desire, do out of conceit, do out of self. And enormous amount of things are happening. Buddha says, take these happenings as raw material for your experiment. Don't claim this is what you do. They are filthy. They are full of karmic forces. You had to suffer. You are committing. And others are disturbed. But even if it is happening, others are disturbed, but you are not responsible. You are not committed. So such a release. And one person, he has written, as far as the thoughts are concerned, 99% of our thoughts are without a thinker. If you are worrying, you can worry. No problem. But you analyze the thoughts, they are thought without thinker. So why are you worrying about? Thoughts coming and going, and if you are going to worry, you can worry all the day. But if you see, am I thinking or it is something happening in my mind, 99% happening. So once discriminated, once separated it out, why should I worry? Because that mind is such a thing, it is absorbing all the kind of thing. Am I responsible for that? If I am intentionally doing, yes. If it is not so, halfway through Nibbana, you are already in Nibbana because you can get it off. All the unintentional things happen through your body because it is not according to your agenda. Your agenda is to Nibbana, but while happening, so much of distractions happen, disturbance happen to the other people. So you, without any hesitation, you can ask pardon. Please excuse me if I disturb you, I have no intention. And it's a very good way of keeping the relationship. And basic thing you would do is, you can sympathize yourself. Self-pity. And actually, you do not know that art. Everything happens, you are worried. And therefore, in the meditation, we have to say, main thing is not to worry. If someone comes and proves you that you have done, yes, then you have to accept it. Otherwise, your analysis must be, this stage, what you call the mind, is hired. The drama running is maybe tragedy or comedy. It is not your directive. You have only given the stage and drama is happening. You just observe. Otherwise, you can get out. It is a complete drama of the Mara. Complete defilements. If you do not know, being it is your state, you claim. Ultimately, what you get is a frustration. And so morning to the evening, see, I have to use the term see in two terms, mindfully see, looking and see, listening and hearing, tasting, smelling and touching. There are no specific terms for my understanding. And thinking and what thought happens. So when you separate them out, you will amazed to see the whole thing happen according to whose agenda. Definitely not your agenda. That much I can assure you. But the game is, drama is full, whether you are there or not. So unless otherwise you become a passive observer, no way out. No way out. And if you have not introduced the subject of mindfulness, very difficult to communicate with the people on this subject. People are such fellows, humans are, putujanas, they are absorbent of distractions, tensions. And they are very happy to accuse oneself. Such a person will never give pardon to the second person. Because he is ever in self-accusation. The day, moment you understand doing and happening, abhyakata and vyakata, you understand this is things are happening not according to my agenda. Then only you can understand the ten armies of Mara, how they are making use of this chance. Unmindful people completely in this game of Mara. Mindful people also not better off, but they know at least. Many thoughts are not with the thinker. Mark Epstein, good book, you can purchase Thought Without the Thinker. And he has written another book, Psychotherapy Without the Self. They are insight, out of insight, and the Western thinkers. I think giving some kind of a perspective for for us, I mean, like Asiatic people, like us.
Next question. When I was doing the meditation this morning in two sessions, both sessions I got sleepiness and there's a pain in my leg. Since the second session was not successful, I spent the time to do the walking meditation. I had to go to my room and sit on a chair to relax into my body. And still I'm doing my meditation while I'm relaxing on the chair. Then I fell to sleep. Then I fell to deep sleep. After this incident, I got a bit of disappointment, frustration and anger came to my mind. Can I do anything else? Please give up.
Are you also feel frustrated and angry? Because question is not telling what is the meditation they did. All the distractions are listed. You see how much escaping the problem and sitting and do what kind of meditation, then I can comment. It's telling I am meditating, but sleepiness happens. You see, you are talking about the drama without the main actor. I also feel frustrated. I also feel distracted. Whoever may be, so I am, my simple, humble question is, what is the kind of meditation you did? So that must be the main issue. Without that, what is the case? You see that how much we are escaping? The main crux of the question is not been mentioned also. So that is happening in the meditation also. So therefore, try to give this kind of thing. I did sitting meditation. I try to focus my attention onto that particular object. How much I can go into that and when that sleepiness happens and while it is happening, am I completely washed off from the breath? Well, these are the basic things. I would say the positive kind of thinking. Otherwise, you are going to say, I'm going to meditate and sleepiness happens. I won't take that kind of question also. Luckily, if you are in front of me, definitely I can discuss with me. So, for the sake of discussion, I'm asking, so when you sit for meditation, how many breaths you can keep, observe, or you can keep face to face with? I am asking 10 minutes, what did you do? Before sleeping up. So then when you are observing the breath, before the breath happened, what did you experience? How do you experience the in-breath versus out-breath? No, difference, that is what I need to know. What is the difference between the in-breath and out-breath? No, that I am asking to please convince me. I know the words are clear and all the kinds, so please give me the sap. What is the difference between the in-breath and out-breath? Mm-hmm. As far as the nostrils are concerned, do you feel the same point in the in-breath and out-breath, or in-breath and out-breath changing the touching point subtle way? So that is what that. If it is not clear, you have to understand that when you go to the court, when you are cross-questioned, these are the points you are making. In breath, I am observing the inside of the left nostril or inside of the right nostril, that kind of thing. Because you have already touched now, before breath, the sleepiness happened, 10 minutes you caught. You are doing anapanasati. You know the mind says, in-breath and out-breath is different, and you are now giving certain amount of clues. And the moment you are trying to maximize this 9-10 minutes to see sharply difference between the in-breath and out-breath, that's the best answer for the forthcoming sleepiness. But if you ignore it, if you are not going to give the proper value for that, definitely you are inviting the sleepiness. So therefore, your sharpness must be there. That's a precise aiming and diligent the energy must be there. You have to understand, I get only little minutes and then I am falling asleep. So within that limits, minutes, I have the chance to see the in-breath and out-breath and get maximum, as much as possible, the detail that is called natural characteristics of the in-breath and out-breath. Or sometimes it is called personal characteristics of, intrinsic characteristics of in-breath and out-breath. Moment you ignore it, you will be punished with the sleepiness. The moment you try to explore into the in-breath and out-breath in details, the mind becomes agile, the mind becomes mobile, mind becomes activated, and that is the opposite of the antidote for the forthcoming sleepiness. So the way the question expressed indicate you have not given the due respect for the few number of breaths you have already experienced. So that attitude is being punished by the sleepiness. So therefore, whenever you go there, once you understand, after a while I am going to go fall into sleep, and with that understanding, when you go to next sitting, you must understand right from the beginning, whenever possible, so discreetly difference between in-breath and out-breath, and according to your witness, it says it is possible. And if you wish to, and that indicates how close you are observing the breath. If you are looking at a distance and in a half-hearted manner, the sleepiness, thoughts, pain, everything can come. But if you go close to the breath, observe as much as possible, the mind and the object become closer and closer. And the result, as a result, you get a lot of information about in-breath and out-breath, and chronological difference within that 10 minutes, breath becomes subtler and subtler, or agitated, or desirable, or undesirable. These things are very crucial. So if I, leaving aside that all the story, if I am to question you, within that 10 minutes, did you experience the breath becomes subtler and subtler, or ultimately you lost the whole path of breath and the sleepiness appeared? What kind of a... So that means the meditation has gone very nicely. That is the point I wanted to make it. But you have not given the support for the developing mindfulness. Next day, when you go there, expect the sleepiness to happen in 8 minutes. When you are in a sitting retreat like that, the mind becomes very quickly friendly with the breath, close with the breath, and therefore not like earlier. It can come face to face it, and immediately if you are not agitating, mobilizing your energy, if you are not reading the in-breath and out-breath, quick the sleepiness happens. It is not sleepiness. When the mind becomes, the breath becomes subtle, it becomes monotonous. It becomes bored. It becomes fearful. So you have to go prepared. The bored, the monotony can happen, but if I can't understand, as in sets in, the sleepiness, the monotony, the disinterest, the fearfulness, definitely you will be punished with this, either agitation or sleepiness. So only one method available, knowing this is a sign of progress, go prepared. When you go prepared, sleepiness won't come. Even if it happens, it will be a little delayed. And therefore you have enough chances to go to the deep layers of breath. And when you go from today to next day, this sitting to next sitting, your sharpness of the mindfulness also becoming sharper and sharper, deeper and deeper. And therefore, you can see forthcoming signs of the breath, the sleepiness, the drowsiness, the slimy mind, the sloth and torpor. When it happens, you have to agitate and give the more focus attention to the breath. In under such circumstances, not only comparing the in-breath and out-breath, you must mobilize energy to see the beginning, the middle and the end of the breath, in-breath. The beginning, the middle and the end of the out-breath. But in my observation, I found the most tickling point is, electric point is, end of the out-breath. When the out-breath is ceasing to exist, if you can follow to the last drop, you can see the last drop is very close to sleepiness. In the tapering end of the out-breath. And again out-breath happens, again you observe the specializing, the tapering end, and there you can understand, towards the end, you lose the sign, you lose the object. As if you are losing the rail when you are walking in a footbridge. Always you have to have the rail, otherwise you can't balance it. So, ultimately what happens is, the rail, the touching point, the object, the sign disappearing. And then the mindfulness become bewildered. As if I have no railing. But the Buddha says mindfulness has two forms. One thing is mindfulness based upon the object or sign or its natural characteristic. Even that sign is disappeared, even the object disappeared, even the natural character disappeared, the mindfulness can continue. As if the aeroplane is going on the ground, after a certain speed, it loses the ground and gets the balance on the air. Earlier it got the ground on the hard soil, where the passengers can feel. After a while, when it's about to airborne, it gets the balance on the aerodynamics. It never topple. And before the oval ride and the two Wright brothers, no one thought that such a big iron machine can be airborne. They thought always it must be a sound, solid base. Now, I think 200 years ago, they thought there may be some kind of a balance, aerodynamic, and they tried. But for that, you see, huge amount of energy, huge amount of momentum, and huge amount of balancing must be there, and then it can be airborne. You will never get airborne unless otherwise you monitor the end of the in-breath, out-breath. Or disappearing tail under the in-breath and out-breath both. And that is, I would say, attending to your age in meditation. Unless you go up to that level, your meditation is still adolescent. Once you go up to that, only you become a full-fledged person, understand the mindfulness with the touch of the object and without the touch of the object. And that is the point you see, you are getting detached from your sensuous objects. But still the mindfulness is there, the balance is there. You can see the consciousness have many layers, many paradigms. First thing is based upon the sensuous or tangible or concrete objects, but once it is become subtler and subtler, still continue without tangible things. And that is from that only meditation start. After that you are making the ground for this unknown thing. So some people say this is the way you go to the subconscious, yati hita. Till that you are manipulating and tackling the udu hita or the tip of the iceberg. Through the tip of the iceberg you can go to the deep layers so that you go submarine and so you have to go along the edge without the fear to the water. Slowly it becomes very deep and then only you understand this due to the upward push of this huge ice lump, only the tip is coming out. The tip is just observable, but huge part is underneath, so then only you go to the mystery of the meditation, and otherwise mind is cheating you and putting you into slumber. So go prepare. So without this kind of cross-questioning, by these words, I can't understand what is happening. And while cross-questioning, we go into the deep, not only your mind, not only your meditation, everyone can share. Because everyone is get trapped in this point.
That's a question.
Written questions are finished.
So
we are running out of time, so we'll give a chance for you.
Thank you, when I begin that in times sitting, I find that my head become really rough, very rough. I have felt that way before. So it happened throughout the time, but I can't get into any point that left touch. So I've been in that situation for a little longer. Then I felt I should try, since I can't concentrate on the breath, I should go to the, look at my army,
rising and falling.
Rising and falling. But I think that is very convenient and more, can do it better way than try to concentrate the breath. This is very easy for me. So I completed the whole session with that. So my question is, a person should do the both, the breath in and breath out, or should do it rise and fall, or do it according to the circumstances?
Generally, it says that for the beginner, you have to take either one. By the experience, what is most prominent, what is most consistent. But even the early part of the expression, it says that breath is there, but the touching voice is not there. But it is not a complaint. My question is, are you sure your mind is with the breath, not with the thought, not with the sound, not with the pain? Are you sure that much? That may be gross or subtle. My mind is with the breath. Is it confirmed?
I can't tell you that. Yeah, it's there, but my mind is keep on complaining. Is I'm taking that forcefully. Sometimes through a lot of time has come and tell you, but the pattern is quite different. What I never felt that way before. I have a doubt whether I'm taking that forcefully, or I couldn't. Go ahead, say that it's...
So then I have to go still further. Why don't you just practice, just sit symmetrically, relax, and don't search for any object, just be here and now. So either if the breath happen, consider it as a casual visitor. If the rising and falling happen, consider it as a casual visitor. Your main object is here, now I am sitting. So there is no need of force breathing, no need of searching this and that. You take this as your primary object. Then there won't be any problem. So this is because of how do you call it, manipulation and forced breathing in order to get in maximize the results. So therefore, the mind is so cunning. So therefore, you have to go to the still lower gear. You can sit comfortably, ask the mind, are you happy? Is the body comfortable, relaxed and symmetrical? That is your primary object. And then the what is the next best will be not a decision, it is something happening. The breath happens, that will be your primary object. If the rising and falling happens, that will be your primary object, no more. Don't try to put a conscious decision, I must go for breath or rising and falling. Let them come and prove. And you take the background as your sitting posture. So that is a very sound answer. Instead of going into the further detail, you have to go back to the comfortable sitting.
So it's a matter of the breathing practice in that breathing without the anapana for a long time.
Even long time you practice, you have not got the basic points cleared. Because you don't know, you don't discriminate whether you are forced breathing or happening. That indicates that you are not qualified to still tackle an object. So therefore, before the object manifests, you have to make sure comfortably I am sitting here. Once that is affirmed, the object will come and prove itself rather than searching. rather than chasing. Once you go on searching, only this problem happens. If you let it happen, this problem never come into being. We have only 5 minutes more, so we can talk go for another question.
I think someone experienced this thing, but it's a very another acute thing.
Soon after I sit, close the eyes, I feel like an arrow go inside deeply, and then feel kind of a comfortable feeling. And again, penetration happen, and a heart start feel like beating, and observe clearly the things are arising and passing away, and the mind going to read this as consciousness, and that is also disappearing, and then appear darkness. Whenever this feeling disappeared, there's a time gap, and again, like a sunrise and the rising of the mind, and there's a tunnel vision, and there's a sound in the ear that also appear like a manifestation of the mind. Please explain this. So this is the transition. When the transition happened, the mind going to take the upper hand, going to give the interpretation. This is the only culprit. And when the mind is going to take upper hand, going to interpret, you are not facilitating your direct experience. Your direct experience is the most precious. So direct experience is now happening in a very nice way. And when the mind going to say, this is what you call vijnana or consciousness, and kind of thing, this interpretation, it is naturally happening, but don't claim them as me, mine. But what is happening is very good. Let it happen in each and every sitting. Ultimately, your mind will learn the art of plunging into the subconscious. And when you go there, subconscious appear like unexplainable, uncertainty, boundless, no in and out, no any manipulation necessary. It is running by itself. So therefore, when that happens, you must withdraw as much as possible all your intentions, all your determinations, any mental manipulations, let the mind to run it. In my terminology, you have to put the plane in autopilot. Let the meditation, the mindfulness to take the upper hand, you be just an observer. When the autopiloting happens, the pilot is alive and he's observing the screens, but computers are taking the care. The explanation indicates, if I am correct, very nicely meditation is happening. Only the caution I am going to wish to add is, don't try to interpret it. Don't let the interpreting mind to come and take the upper hand. Even if it happens, don't worry. This is the nature of mind. You let the direct touch or direct experience to happen. So we'll keep the other questions for the next session. We have taken about almost 2 hours. So I wish to mark the end of our discussion. Thank you very much for the participation. Mm-hmm.